This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we learn about a big, like really big, stick art project in the works for a farm in Door County this summer. Now, there's a good chance you've seen or maybe even been a server or cashier, say, dealing with an angry customer or an overwhelming amount of orders. Even though the situation's stressful, the employee still smiles and acts cheerfully. Part of the job. Our guest today calls that emotional labor and says wearing a fake customer service smile can be bad for our health, and it can be a factor even for workers who don't deal directly with customers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in the service industry, or is your job public-facing in some way? How have things changed since the pandemic? Do you have to put on an emotion no matter how you feel? Is it hard to do or easy? How often do you feel stressed or burnt out because of it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah Rifergetti is an associate professor of communication at UW-Milwaukee. She studies the connection between emotions and the workplace. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Good. Well, the phrase emotional labor, I think people use it in different ways as it's developed over the years. How do you define it, especially when it comes to the workplace?
Yes, actually, Arlie Hochschild came up with this term. She's a sociologist in the 80s when she studied airline stewardesses and bill collectors. And she defines it as the management of feeling to create a publicly observable facial and body display. So in other words, basically, it is when we manufacture emotions for the benefit of commerce.
And if I read your work right, I mean, we think of that as, you know, a cashier or a flight attendant or whatever. It actually comes up in more workplaces than just those public-facing jobs. You've done some work looking at more behind-the-scenes emotional labor.
Yes, absolutely. So when we're working in an organization with other people and we have to fake emotions because we feel like that organization expects or requires those emotions, or perhaps we have to subdue angry or negative emotions, that can be emotional labor as well.
And then you distinguish emotional labor, I think, from emotional work. What's that?
Right. So emotional labor is about the manufacturing of those emotions. And there's surface acting, which is just the outright faking. And there's deep acting, which is when we might reframe a situation or do some perspective taking in order to adjust our emotions and get in line. But there's also emotional work, which is when we walk into a workplace that's laden with emotions, and those emotions are just present there in the workplace. So for example, if you're a first responder, that work is emotional in and of itself. And then the ways in which you manufacture emotions to do that work would be the emotional labor piece. So they're intertwined, but they're a little bit different.
Okay, so for the emotional labor part, we got to appear or maybe even make ourselves be happy, no matter how we felt when we clocked in. How do we start to figure out if that affects our own emotional or even physical well-being?
Yes. Well, this is something researchers have been working on for a long time. And initially, any faking of emotions was thought to be problematic. However, sometimes when we fake positive emotions, that can actually put us in a better mood. And then emotional contagion is when we catch each other's emotions. And so those positive emotions, like, for example, if you've ever been to a sports arena and people get really excited, those emotions can actually be good for us. So it's not always a negative thing, but when somebody is really negative to us and we have to pretend that we're not affected negatively by those emotions, that's when it can be really taxing for us to put on a smile and to address people who are maybe not as deserving of our positive emotions as we might feel.
Well, we're inviting people to share their personal stories about this emotional labor at 800-642-1234. I'll start with me. I've got a job where I have to, you know, even if I'm feeling tired or unhappy or whatever, I need to sound a particular way on the job. But the good news is I really like my job and it's really easy for me to do that. It's not like a lot of labor for me. Does it matter our attitude toward our job for like how big a lift this is?
Absolutely. So even one of the recommendations we often will give to employers is try to find people who align with the emotions and the value within the organization and the type of work that they're doing, right? So there are probably days where you come in and you're having a hard time. you have the benefit of not being on camera, which helps a lot.
Yeah.
And you've got some back behind the scenes time, right? You might have time during an ad to take a deep breath. So some of those factors of your job also probably help you engage in that emotional labor.
We're talking to Sarah Rifforgetti from UW-Milwaukee, Associate Professor of Communication there, looking at this idea of emotional labor, when you have to put on a happy face maybe for your job or behave in a certain way, even if you're not feeling it. In some cases, can be bad for you. Some cases, can be pretty good. You can join in with your story, your work experience, maybe at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Mika is with us in Wausau. Mika, hello.
Hi.
And what did you want to tell us about?
So I'm just finding it really interesting. I think it's a very important issue to talk about emotional labor, especially on both sides of the spectrum. I feel like, especially with the past couple of years, it's been really rough for everybody, not only in the workplace, but also outside. I've been noticing a lot of managers, especially dealing with, you know, crazy shortages in staffing. And the problem I think that we're running into is that sometimes they can let their frustration come out on the workers who are already there. And then it becomes like this toxic cycle of like, well, now the workers are starting to feel like this brunt, this like lash out. And then all of a sudden it becomes like a whole thing of now we're bringing our personal life into everything. And then it becomes workers and managers playing therapists to each other sometimes when it's like really difficult for everybody involved. And then it becomes kind of like this vicious, toxic cycle of all of us dealing with everybody else's problems on top of our own. And sometimes it can get really, really difficult.
Mika, I got to add, this is something it sounds like you've experienced in your own work.
Oh, goodness. Every job that I work at, it always ends up becoming like, you know, it starts off amazingly and then all of a sudden drama happens and it becomes such a like overbearing presence on your workload.
Mika, thank you for sharing it. I hope you end up somewhere where that isn't happening. But Sarah, Mika, not alone, I'm guessing, that downward spiral of toxicity, I think she has encountered.
Absolutely. So just like emotional contagion can share positive emotions, emotional contagion can also affect us in really negative ways. And it's really hard when somebody's telling you to be positive, but they're yelling at you to do that, right? So I can definitely understand what you're saying.
Be happy now.
Yeah, be happy, gosh darn it. But there are things that managers can do, right? So if this cycle is happening, they can acknowledge when employees are really struggling and give them like just a chance to step back into a back room to kind of contain their emotions. The other thing you can do is you can kind of segment your emotions. So for example, news reporters that will go out to fairly graphic scenes will oftentimes segment their emotions and do their job and then acknowledge those emotions later when they have time to unpack and decompress.
Thanks again, Mika, for calling in at 800-642-1234. Sarah, when does this kind of emotional labor start to lead to burnout?
Yeah, so we did a study where we had people do daily diaries for 2 weeks. And what we found was if you're faking your emotions and you're engaging in that surface acting, on a daily basis, it will start to affect your moods and the ways that you're feeling in terms of feeling motivated, enthusiastic, lively. And then even in a period of only 2 weeks, it starts to wear on you in terms of burnout and feeling those negative emotion cycles. So everything that Mika was talking about, it doesn't take that long for that downward cycle to start. And so the trick is trying to catch it as soon as possible so that you can buoy up those emotions once again.
And I think that was the study where you were surveying IT workers, who I don't necessarily think of as public facing. Yeah, they have to help people deal with their problems. But it is, as we were talking about a little earlier, this emotional labor can even happen sort of behind the scenes. Are you fitting into the emotional, preferred mode of your workplace?
Absolutely. So when we walk into a workplace and we feel like other people in the workplace expect us to perform certain emotions, even if it's not in the service industry, but certainly it's more pronounced in the service industry, we sense that and we will perform as those around us expect us to, usually so that we can be good team members and be part of that job. So yeah, even in offices behind the scenes, we can be engaging in emotional labor.
Sarah Rifragetti is with us, Associate Professor of Communication at UW-Milwaukee. She's sharing her research on emotional labor in the workplace. And you could share maybe your own experience at 800-642-1234. Do you work in a job where you got to come across as happy, even if you're not happy? How easy is that to do in your workplace? How hard is it to do? Is there something that your managers or the business owners can do to help you do that? Call it at 800-642-1234, or do you just genuinely enjoy what you're doing? So it's easy to seem happy because you get happy. 800-642-1234 is the number. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about the emotional labor you might perform at work. Sarah Rifragetti is with us, Associate Professor of Communication at UW-Milwaukee. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. If you ever worked in a restaurant, especially out there dealing with diners, maybe you work in a department store as a sales associate, ever feel like you're acting at your job? Are you doing this emotional labor where you're keeping a happy face on even when you're not happy? Do you find it stressful, or does it come smoothly to you if you support or manage people in that customer service kind of role? What do you do to help them? Call 800-642-1234. And have things gotten tougher over the course of the pandemic for one reason or another? Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah, suppose somebody is a business owner or a manager of people who, you know, deal with the public, maybe with diners at a restaurant, for example. They know they're going to interact in some tough situations sometimes. Do you have thoughts on how they can create a supportive work environment to help that be as unstressful as it can be?
Yeah, so the business managers can have some of that backspace for their employees to decompress. They can also intervene when it seems like emotions are running high and help navigate that situation. Employees can also be really aware of when they're faking emotions, and then they can engage in some deep breathing. They can also think about ways to reframe the interaction. So if somebody is yelling and screaming, rather than seeing that as that person yelling and screaming at them, they can think about maybe that person is having a really bad day and there's something else going on. And how can I generate compassion or a positive emotion to turn this interaction around?
We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who says maybe this is a result of workers having less power in the workplace compared to previous decades with more unions and labor strikes. What do you think?
Certainly, there is always a power dynamic when somebody feels like they have to perform an emotion for their job. And so that's quite possible. I haven't done extensive research on labor unions, so I can't say that for sure. But I do know that the pandemic has been wearing on us, just because of the ongoing uncertainty and unrest. And so that can also heighten our base emotions so that when we walk into interactions, it doesn't take all that much to tip us over. So taking long walks, being aware of our emotions could certainly help us to regulate our emotions a little bit better, so that when we do walk into situations and we're interacting with people, we can act more in the ways that we want to act and be the people we want to be.
You mentioned the pandemic and how it may have made things worse. Of course, people in restaurants and stores have also been called on to enforce mask mandates. Those flight attendants we were talking about earlier, them too. I don't know if you're researching this now, but how do you see that affecting this kind of emotional labor and the stress it can bring to people who are working?
The mask is interesting because we can't see people's whole faces. And so it's really hard to read emotions when we're just hearing tone of voice and seeing their eyes. And so that can actually add an added burden in sensing other people's emotions and responding appropriately, and also expressing positive emotions. I've been teaching in a mask now for a year, and you know, to try to just smile as much with your eyes as possible takes a lot of effort. And so just trying to navigate and use those nonverbal cues has become even more burdensome when they're taken away with masking. But also enforcing policies that you may or may not agree with can be really challenging. And so, again, maybe that gets at some of that power dynamic of when we're doing a lot of things to navigate our own emotions and the emotions of those around us, it places a great deal of a burden on us. And so being aware of where we're feeling and how we're communicating our emotions can really help to open up possibilities to more positive interactions.
That's interesting, the mechanical detail of not seeing the smile. And they call it smizing, I think, in the model world, where you smile with your eyes. I can't do that. Have you seen other cues, or maybe use them as an instructor, like other ways to communicate positive emotion when people can't just see you smiling?
Well, so you just raised your voice. There was a little lilt in your voice, which communicated positive emotions through our vocal tone. And so that's another way that we can communicate our energy and our positivity. The speed of which you talk can also help. So those are small vocal cues, gestures. When you're seeing people, gestures can also communicate emotion. So just thinking really carefully about how can we listen for other vocal cues to pick up on emotions so that we can respond appropriately.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Iron River. Scott, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Really appreciate the conversation. And Rob, I appreciate your personal input there, because I often wonder about that being the upbeat radio talk host that you are. So anyway, I'm a retired school counselor, but I am still working. And one thing I would want to do is, I often, when I talk to kids in classrooms about a positive classroom environment and how that translates eventually into a positive work environment. And I want to put together a program involving music and a message about making an individual commitment to being a positive influence in the classroom, again, with a future focus on a positive work environment eventually. Any input would be appreciated.
Well, Scott, before you go, it sounds like a work in progress, but what kind of things have you tried saying to kids, and how have they responded?
Well, yeah, I try to make it an individual choice, and that it is a choice, and whatever we bring to the classroom, our individuality, that, regardless of our home environment or our struggles with this or that, we can choose to bring a positive attitude to our classes and other things that we do in our lives. And so that it's mainly that it's a choice each one of us can make.
Interesting. Scott, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Sarah, any thoughts for Scott on helping create, it sounds like, kind of a curriculum for a positive classroom attitude?
Right. Yeah, I can tell that he's really building this community among his students. And what I find really interesting is that he's having this interaction with them, talking to them about the ways in which they're showing up and the ways in which they're showing up that then feed off of each other to build this community. Right. It's really hard to leave things at the door, but when students can walk into a classroom and feel really safe, they're going to learn more, because the emotional flooding that they get from negative emotions, if they can turn that off, it will help them with focus, and it will help them to then generate more positive emotions. And I should say one thing, positive emotions help us with creativity. They help us feel good. They help with something called organizational citizenship behavior. So we're showing up and we're feeling good with each other. But I will say there are benefits to negative emotions as well. So if we're making really tough decisions, it's better not to be in a super positive mood, right? Because we'll slow down, we'll think about details, we'll compare things. So while there is great benefit to positive emotions, there's also benefit to neutral and negative emotions.
Scott, thanks for that call. We're talking to Sarah Riffergetti from UW-Milwaukee, Associate Professor of Communication there, looking at emotional labor in the workplace and when it can get stressful. And Sarah, if there's somebody out there listening thinking, hey, this is me, I'm doing this emotional labor and it's burning me out, it's really a problem, I'm not sure if I can keep doing it, do you have thoughts, kind of a toolkit they can use to step back, figure out what's going on?
Absolutely. So your body gives you cues all the time. And when your body starts to not feel good, you're gaining weight, you're not sleeping, you're having other issues, then that's a time to really check your emotions, figure out what kind of impact is this work having on me, and do I need to change where I'm sitting or standing or working, or do I need to change something that I'm doing? And so really just listening to your body for some of those cues, because it tends to come out in our bodies in ways that allow us to recognize there's something going on. And then we can make changes in our lives that will help us be the people that really that we want to be.
Now, you've written a couple few studies on this already. What kind of research either do you have in the works or that you're curious about and you'd like to pursue?
Absolutely. I'm really interested right now in how students get out of difficult, stuck situations. That emotion of feeling really the stuckness, right? Mm-hmm. Really not able to move forward and progress. And so I'm interested in looking at that emotion and the types of communication messages that people receive that help them be resilient.
Interesting. So when you say students, are you know, the ones you're working with at the university level or K through 12?
Right now I'm looking at college students, but certainly the research is applicable beyond college as well in terms of how can we use communication in really productive ways to help people be resilient.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Sarah Rifferjetti is an associate professor of communication at UW-Milwaukee. We talked to her about emotional labor, how it affects our well-being, what we can do to help avoid emotional burnout on the job. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe your experiences, or maybe your own solutions for that matter. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Let us know the kind of emotional labor you do or have done at the workplace and whether it stresses you out or it's something that you have a pretty easy time dealing with. Start your weekdays with great conversations on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 8, it is a great time to visit a state park or maybe start making plans for a trip later in the summer. Well, you can get the latest news from the parks around the state with a state recreation official and join in. Let us know what you have in the works or ask questions about what's going on at your favorite state park. You could email right now, ideas@wpr.org. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network.